Shalom Aleichem Rabbi Yisai. My name is Moshe Aaron Englard. We've got to know a bunch of you already so far. I was asked to speak about my Rebbe, Reb David Soloveitchik. So I want to just give you a little bit of background, a mashu, a drop. What did I have with Reb David Soloveitchik? And we'll follow through, Mitzvah Hashem. So in the year Tavshin Nun Dalit. Yeah, 94. I came to Eretz Yisrael as a bacher to learn by the Rishiva of David Soloveitchik. So I was zeichet to hear shir from him for quite a number of years. That's one part of the Rishiva of David was his shir. I don't think I'm going to talk about that tonight. But there was another thing that we came for. And that was to see this Adam Gadol, who is a Gadol Ba'anokim in many avenues of Avodas Hashem. Now, one day one of my friends comes to me, and he says to me, Moshe Aaron, he says, Reb David has a minyan in his house on Shabbos. Interestingly enough, it starts from Kriyas HaTorah. He has a minyan for Kriyas HaTorah and for Musaf. Now by Musaf, there's Duchening. Reb David wants to have two Kehanim by Duchening, because if you have two Kehanim, then Duchening is their Raisa. Birchas Kehanim is their Raisa when you have two Kehanim. There's only one Kehan, it's a Derabbanon. Well, my friend was a Kohen, and he says to me, maybe you'd like to be Reb David's second Kohen? Sounds nice, but like, what does it entail? He says, well, you have to sort of like conscribe that you're going to be there every week. If you're not going to be there 1 week, make sure you get someone else. So Hashem, Baruch Hashem, Devisha put in me at that moment an inspiration of Seichel, and he told me to say yes. And so, Baruch Hashem, I didn't give up that opportunity. So I was in Reb David's house every Shabbos, for about 23 years. I got to daven with this Adam Gadol. I heard shir from him. I got was around him. So we'd like to share a few of the stories, maybe and some other messages, possibly, of what he was about, what we could learn from him. Now, the first thing is, anybody who walked into David's house, you felt like you walked into a different world. Now, part of the reason is, because many people say he never left Brisk. He never left Brisk. He was living his whole entire life in a mindset, in a mind frame. However it was in Brisk, that's the way it was put. That's the way it is, that's the best way. But besides for that, that's not what I mean. It still looked a little bit like Yerushalayim. But he lived in such a fashion. He lived in such a way, in the simplest of simple Olam Hazadik issues. Whatever in his house was plain and simple. The walls were painted plain. They were actually two-tone. It was white on the top and a different color on the bottom. But it was plain. No, not any fancy designs, not beveled, not anything else like that. He took a look. I could be Rabbi Rosenbaum mentioned some of this last week already, but he took a look around. His chairs, there was no such thing as upholstery on a chair. There wasn't a cushion on a chair. His dining room set of chairs was these plain, simple, stackable chairs. Until eventually they weren't stackable because he had bars holding them together that they shouldn't be shaky. The Sfarim Shafa was a metal shelving. I mean, people wouldn't want that in their machsan today. That's what he wanted. He didn't want to know about Olam Hazeh. The table was an old table. The floors were very simple floors. They were even crooked a little bit. He had this thing hanging in the middle of his dining room, his salon. It was hanging from the ceiling, a long string coming down from the ceiling, a very high ceiling. In the Gula houses had a tall ceiling. So it was like this string hanging down, which apparently at one point in time was a chut chashmal. It was a, how do you say that? Now, the chandelier. I want to describe the chandelier for a second, okay? Okay, first of all, it used to be covered, the wires used to be covered by some type of material which already faded quite a long time ago. And around the light was this chandelier. Now, the chandelier was something made out of, I'd say, crepe paper. It was metal wire, a ring, another ring, and a bunch of, like, light blue crepe paper going around it. Now, one year, again, we spoke about this one. I'm just going to make a small mention. David was very careful to do everything that it says in the Torah. And I want to elaborate on that a little bit later. But one of the things, there's a Yerushalmi that says that before Pesach, they would scrape the walls. So every year in Nisan, he got his walls painted in his dining room. The walls got painted, the lower half of the wall. Most of the time it was some type of beige, off-white. There were a couple years that it was light blue. So one time I went to the Rebbetzin and I said to her, I said, I see you painted your walls to match the chandelier. She got all apologetic. My daughter made it when she was younger and we had to put it up. As if this was some major piece of gashmius that he had something covering his light bulb. Now, later on, I found out a little bit of a sequel to this story. Actually, I was the sequel, but apparently, when this chandelier wasn't up, Reb David gave a fiery shmooze one time about how you shouldn't have luxuries, you shouldn't be living in Olam Hazeh, you shouldn't be living with Olam Hazeh, I mean, you shouldn't have luxuries and all the things like that. 2 weeks later, this thing goes up around his light bulb. Well, there was a bachur who decided he's going to wait for Purim, that might be an opportune time. And he goes to Reb David on Purim and he says to him, this is before my time, Reb Yitzchak, okay? This goes about 30, 40 years ago, I don't know how exactly. He says to him, Rebbe, I don't understand. He says, look at this. This is luxury. I didn't want it. It's luxuries. I didn't want it. What should I do? My daughter made it. My daughter made it school. He calls Rebbetzin. Rebbetzin, come here. Tell him what happened. She told him, my daughter made it and we put it up. Now, so he didn't even want a paper chandelier in his house because it's something extra. But he put it up because his daughter made it in school. And it stayed there. It's still there today. His daughter's a grandmother already. He had it up. He left it up. But he didn't want it there. His whole house screamed one thing. It screamed Rabbeisai. And his whole hanhaga. It says, we're here in this world for a purpose. And the purpose is not this world. I think that's the drum that he went by the whole time. I'm here in this world for a purpose, and the purpose is not this world. So anything that has to do with this world, it's a danger. It might take me away from the next world. He had one thing in mind when every single move of his life, every single thing, is this going to bring me Olam Haba or not? Is this what Hashem wants from me or not? Is this the Ratzon Hashem? So every action, everything was measured by that. I'm living towards Olam Haba. I'm living towards Kvod Shamayim. I want to glorify Hashem's name in this world. I want to make sure that I'm doing what Hashem wants. And that leads us to the next Nekuda. It's called Diktuk HaMitzvahs. Diktuk HaMitzvahs. When he did a mitzvah, he didn't just do it Yoytze Tzayin. That's it. I want to get it off my shoulders. I want to make sure it's done with. Every mitzvah was part of his life. He lived it. He was involved in every mitzvah you can imagine. Matzis, Rabbi Yisai. Matzis. Before matzis, the first thing is there was a day where he went to take Mayim Shalonu. We knew when Mayim Shalonu was because the shir depended on when is he going to Mayim Shalonu. Is it going to be shir? Is it going to be early shir? Is it going to be late shir? He has to go pick up water for the matzis. When you need matzahs, you need to get water the day before you bake matzahs, because it has to stay overnight. Shalonu means it was lon. It slept overnight. That way the water is cool enough to use for your matzahs. So he would go to take the mayim shalonu. Not only he would go to take the mayim shalonu to go get the water, he wanted everybody in the entire family who was possibly going to be part of the matzahs to be there at that time. It's your mitzvah. It's part of your mitzvah. Make sure you're there. Make sure you're part of it. I went one time to help him out bake the matzahs. I mean, more than one time, but one time when I went to help him bake matzahs, his nephew came in. She says to him, we missed you yesterday. Where were you? You lost out on a mitzvah. So his nephew tells him, I sent a shliach. I sent one of my children. You lost that on a mitzvah. You should have been there yourself. She says to him, but anyway, I don't take it. I'm not the one who takes the water. The fetter, the uncle, my heilige uncle, you're the one who takes the water. You lost out on a mitzvah. Explanation. It's your mitzvah. It's your matzis. It's part of your matzis. You go there. You be part of it. He made sure that he was by the matzahs. He made sure the matzahs came out of the oven, hot matzahs. He would look at it, he would flip it over. Because he cared about every mitzvah. Chanukah, I was once by him. Before Chanukah, I think it was Erev Chanukah or Erev Chanukah. I went to speak to him about that. He wanted to ask him to daven for a relative of mine who wasn't well at the time. So I watch him, he's preparing wicks for Chanukah Neres. He's preparing his wicks. Now, what do you do to prepare wicks? You'd imagine, at most, you take some cotton, you roll it, how long could it take? 5 minutes, you're done. He had to prepare two for Motzah Shabbat, two for Friday afternoon, and three for Motzah Shabbos. No, that's not what happens. The first thing is that, what do you make the wick from? So his brother, Rebbe Fall, figured out one time that there's a special type of wick that burns very nicely. Let me try to explain to you what it was from. This was like an einfall. This was like, you figured it out. On Shabbos, the briskers were makbid not to use electricity. They had to use either a generator or battery lights. So for many, many, many years, Reb David had a car battery or a truck battery. Attached to that were wires with these little lights. There was one fluorescent light in his dining room, a few little lights around the house, in the kitchen, somewhere else. And that's how he had light in his house. What about heat? How do you warm your house? So there's something called a neft heater. It's a heater that runs on an oil called neft. Rather not pleasant smell, but if you make it low enough, it doesn't bother you so much. Like, you know, sometimes you walk down Shabbos morning, you know it's Shabbos because you smell your mother's chalent. We knew it was Shabbos when we walked into Shiva's house and we smelled the neft heater. But we knew it was Shabbos anyway, Baruch Hashem. But that was just one of those memories. So this neft heater had a wick. It was a round wick. Okay, it was completely round. It was about this big. Okay, and it looked like lattice work, like a fencing. What? Lattice work, like a sayrig in the Beis HaMikdash. It was like a fence, like, you know, that's how it was made. And then it had a very nice light. It actually, besides that it gave off heat, but it was a shiny light. So Befol realized that this type of wick makes a nice light. So I was there, Reb David was sitting there, and he's pulling threads out of this wick from the neft heater. Takes out two or three threads, starts spinning it, twist, 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 twist. Then another two, twist, 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 and more, and more, and more, until he did 13 strings that he took out and twisted and twisted and twisted and twisted and twisted, folded in half, did something. It took him a half an hour to make 5 wicks. Now, Rabbi say, we're not talking about a man who had extra time on his hands. This is a man who was known for his hasmada. He would learn 16 hours a day when he was a bacher and when he was first married. He didn't waste a minute. But it was important to him. It was important to him. You have a mitzvah. You get involved. You live the Torah. You learn the Torah and you live the Torah. That's what he was doing. That's what he did his entire life. His tefillah was just something that was unreal. He would cry a lot by davening. Tons. He would cry. But where do you think he cried? Where did he cry? He cried with Baruch Aleinu when he's davening for Parnosa. Yosla Rosenblatt has a song, Oy Parnosa, Oy Parnosa, Oy Parnosa. That's where he cried. He cried when he got to Yerushalayim Ircho, Barachim Toshuv. When he got to Tzemach David Avdecha Meher Satzmiach, when he was talking about the Beis HaMikdosh, he was yearning for the Rebbeinu Shalom to come back and show us the Shechinah in this world. I heard him one time when he was in the middle of crying in the middle of Shemin Esrei. He was in the middle of Ritzei. V'hoshev es ha'avoida lidvir beisecha. Return the avoida to the Beis HaMikdosh. V'hoshev es ha'avoida lidvir beisecha. He repeated it 6 times. That's what he cared about. He cared about Hashem. He cared about the Rebbeinu Shalom. He wanted that the world should be a place where everybody recognizes who is the master of this world. On Rosh Hashanah, on Rosh Hashanah, every Shabbos he would take maftir. Every Shabbos he would get maftir. Why would he get maftir every Shabbos? Because his father got maftir every Shabbos. Of course, in Brisk. He told to be the tata. He'd like the tata, like your father. But why did his father take a shaita every week? Because of Meir Brachas. He wanted to make sure to be able to be Mekayim Meir Brachas. On Rosh Hashanah, he lost himself. There are words over here I never knew existed in the Brach of the Haftarah. You couldn't hear it. He was so choked up. He was so choked up when he got to these words. Sorry, Rabbi Yisrael. After we learn the Haftarah, so first of all it says, Rachim al Tzion ki beis chayenu, bimerachim on Tzion, on Yerushalayim, on Eretz Yisrael, ki hi beis chayenu. Samchenu Hashem elikenu be'elio anovi avdecho, make us happy, Rabbeinu Shalom, by sending elio anovi, u'b'malchus beis David mishichecho. And with Malchus beis David, he couldn't get the words out of his mouth, he was so choked up. And then he says, al kisoi lo yeshev zor, a foreigner shouldn't sit on the throne of David HaMelech. And I watched tears rolling down his cheek. He loved Hashem. He cared for Hashem. He cared for Hashem. And he was trying to give that over to us. It hurt him if he saw people that weren't doing that. Because this is what we're here for. Because we're in this world for a purpose. And the purpose is not this world. The purpose is Olam Haba. The purpose is the Rabbanu Shalom, is Kvod Shemayim, is doing what Hashem wants. That's how he lived. If anything had a possible use, he made sure to use it. He couldn't waste anything. Nothing got wasted. There was a string that he had in his house. It looked like a string. They held a key. It held a key on the hook. The string, apparently, I found it afterwards, it was made from these type of plastic bags. These type of plastic bags, he had a plastic bag, and he was going to throw it out. So he twisted and twisted and twisted it. He made a key ring out of it. Now, I mentioned before that I was zeicher to be his kohen. My name in the half hour in the fair in the house basically was the kohen. Who's by the door? The kohen is by the door. That was my name. That was my name basically. Sometimes I got an angle rod, sometimes I got an angle ard, but I go fun. The kohen. So, Baruch Hashem, the Eishu benched me with a number of boys. When I had a boy, I would tell my parents, my in-laws, and I would go to the yeshiva. Tell them, skump my mazel tov, I get a mazel tov, I had a boy. She says, mazel tov. She says, the welt, hot from demanitz. The world could use it. Meheri yibon ha-mikdosh. We're going to need kahanim to do avoyin the beis ha-mikdosh. That was his look. The welt hot from the manitz. We could use kahanim in the world because we're going to be loving beis hamikdash soon, Rabbi Isai. We need kahanim in this world to do avoyin the beis hamikdash. We need levim too. They were levim, proud to be levim, because there's going to be a beis hamikdash soon. One time, Baruch Hashem, my children came on a yom tif. The small kahanim got bigger, Baruch Hashem, and we filled the mizrachan, which was probably half the size of a smedish or even less than that. So somebody went. I moved over a little bit from my regular spot to make room for one of my sons. Now, my regular spot, where's my regular spot? Basically, right in front of Reb David. Because there is a halacha by Birchus Kainim that the person being mekabel the bracha should be, let's just say, for example, that this is Mizrach, so the person should be further Meir. Should be not on the sides and not behind the Kayim. In Brisk, the Makbid, then you should be directly opposite the Kayim. In other words, really, Where you're sitting is all fine and good. You're part of the bracha. In Brisk, they want to sit right where you're sitting. They want to stand right opposite the kohen. So my spot was right opposite Reb Dov. One time, I moved over a little bit to make room for my son. Now, the Aron Kodesh, I used to stand right against the wall, and now I moved in front of the Aron. So I moved a little bit further this way. The Chazan was standing around here. So, I wasn't standing, the chazan wasn't in front of me, he was equal with me on my side. After that, Reb David says to me, He says, why'd you move over? What? But my father, he wanted to make sure that the chazan also got part of the bracha. If you're standing directly on the side of the chazan, he's not part of your bracha. So one of his relatives asked him, a cousin, he asked him, he says, but there were other kahanim there also. What's the big deal? So he says, he could get a bracha from another kohen. Why shouldn't he get a bracha from another kohen? There was once a bacher. Bacher, English bacher, who went ben hazmanim to Switzerland. Summer ben hazmanim. He went to Switzerland, he was biking in the mountains, and he fell, he got into a big accident. He was unconscious for 4 days. When he finally came to, his jaw was locked, he couldn't eat solids, he could only eat liquids, he was losing a lot of weight, he was in bad shape. Now, I don't remember if they came to Reb David, they came to Reb David to ask him to daven for this bacher. I don't remember if they came to him while the boy was still unconscious, or they came to him when the boy already woke up and his jaw was locked, but he was in bad shape. Reb Dov made a cheshbon. He made a cheshbon that usually before Ben Azmanim, he makes sure to give a shmooze that guys shouldn't do crazy things Ben Azmanim. That they should be careful Ben Azmanim what they do. And he realized this Ben Azmanim, he didn't give that shmooze. So he felt it was his fault. It was his achrayas. And he took it on his shoulders. And with his tremendous kaycha tefillah, and I don't know what else he did exactly, but eventually the boy, 3 months later, was already much better. Now he's married, Baruch Hashem, with a family. He had a tremendous kaycha tefillah. I mean, it was known that he would daven for his talmidim. People would come with a tzara to him. He would say the whole tilim sometimes for his talmidim, maybe more than sometimes. He felt a achrayis though for each bocha. He felt a achrayis for this bocha. He felt achrayis for him. Possibly it was his fault. See, davened the way the guy should get better. I went to a shiva one time on Purim, many, many years ago, when my oldest boy, I don't know if he was 3, 4, 5 years old, I said, I'd like a bracha from the shiva. A whole year I come in and give the bracha to the Rosh Hashiva. Today I'd like a bracha from the Rosh Hashiva. No. I want a bracha that my son should come and learn by the Rosh Hashiva. Right away on the spot. Now mind you, that means that he would have to be, for my son to be old enough to come and hear a shir by him, it means he would still have to be saying shir at the age of 97. So he says to me, what do you want? I should give myself a bracha. I can't tell you if he did or if he didn't, but at the age of 97, my son who was 20 went to hear shir by the shiva. He had shir for a year. Shiva always, we're going to say he acted hard of hearing. He heard what he needed to hear, but usually he went to him and he would say, Vos! And you had to like repeat yourself once, twice, three times, depending on what it was. There was even a guy in Shir, a nephew of his, who would start off a kasha in the Shir. When he would want to ask something, he would start asking his kasha, Shteit in Rambam. Vos! The guy would stop, wait for the Vos, and then proceed to ask the question. But so one time the Rosh Shir was getting a hearing aid, and he went for a test. He went to the test to get the hearing aid. So there was some type of plexiglass between himself and the fellow who was testing him. The person should be able to do the different levels of how loud, how low, what type of sounds the Rashi would hear. So the man says, repeat after me. So he starts, he says, say kadur. No response. Picks another word in Hebrew. No response. There was a Talmud there, he says, wait a second. He says, Rambam, Rashba. It had to do with Torah. He was able to hear. Kadur, other things like that. Mazu Oysa. Aram just ends with one nekuda. The Shiva, when it came to singing, it's very interesting. On certain occasions, you were allowed to sing. During davening, he didn't go for so much. But Sheva Brochus, he would sit by his... I was once zeich to be by Sheva Brochus for one of his grandchildren. It was like a private Sheva Brochus in his house. And he was singing away songs that they sang in Brisk. These old Litvisha type of songs. I tried figuring out the niggun exactly. But that was one time. By Ne'il Sachag, at the end of Pesach, before we went into the Shiva for Ne'il Sachag, at the very end of Pesach, he would sit and go through the whole Nirtza. We could hear him through the window. He did sing Shabbos Mirus, which to me is interesting. It was an interesting thing. Balkoponim. And then we went in Ne'ilas Achag. By Ne'ilas Achag, after the end of a Yom Tov, we would come in and we would sit down and we would sing. But he made sure the song had to be sang slowly. He would be quiet in the beginning. He wouldn't join right away. Until finally he got attached to the song. He attached himself to the niggun. The niggun brought out feelings of kirvus alekim, of being close to Hashem. A nice slow song, like Lulei Sayroscha. Other songs like that. There was a song that he loved. He even taught it to us. Nafshenu chiksal Hashem, ezreinu u'moginenu hu. But he would attach himself to the words, because a real niggun, the real purpose of a niggun, Rabbi Yisai, is that you could attach yourself to the words. You feel the words. And you're able to. It's a way of expressing yourself and attaching yourself to the Rabbeinu Shlomo. If it's a good niggun, that's a type that could attach you to the Rabbeinu Shlomo. Then you could get. You think about the words and you attach to the Rabbeinu Shlomo. Nafshenu chiksal Hashem, our nefesh, is waiting for the Rabbeinu Shlolem. Ezreinu u'moginenu hu. The Rabbeinu Shlolem helps us out. 2 weeks before he was nifter, I had the schus of going into his room. He was laying in his bed. He was sort of in a coma. I don't know if you might want to call it a coma, but he was mostly sleeping. He was at that point, he was a drop awake. And I went and I started singing with him, Nafshenu chiksal Hashem. And all of a sudden his lips started moving. Nafshenu chiksal Hashem, we're waiting for Hashem. Ezreinu u'moginenu hu. Bez Hashem, Purim is a time that we should realize that. Nafshenu chiksal Hashem. Hashem is Ezreinu Moginenu. He helps us. He saves us. We're going to attach ourselves to Hashem. We should be zeichet to follow in His ways.